Welcome back. It's Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. You might remember last month, we spoke with Gloucester resident Diana Ploss. She'd been a lifelong Democrat who'd lived for years in Cambridge. But back in 2013, things started changing for Diana, and she registered as a Republican. She later quit her job and volunteered full-time for Donald Trump's presidential campaign. And in that October conversation, Diana talked to us about how she believed the nation was on the wrong track and how she felt America needed to come together as a team. Well, we invited Diana Ploss back into the studio today because we wanted to hear how she was feeling now that Donald Trump is president-elect. The second half of our conversation took a really surprising and personal turn. But Diana began by telling us how she feels or felt after Trump had actually won the presidency.
I think it was a couple of days after the election because I was so tired working on it. I did kind of like yes, okay? But my yes was more like for America, like a sigh of relief. I don't feel smug. I don't feel like, ugh, we beat the other side. Uh-huh. That's never how I thought. Now, I feel like America was on a cliff. I feel like we're pulled back a little bit. We can regroup. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is not a time to gloat. This is a time to, we're a team. Remember we talked about teams? We are a team.
Well, so let me ask you, Diana, because I'm really glad that you brought up this point. Because, yeah, last time we talked a lot about how you feel like America needs to be a team and
yes.
come together. But you know that there are a lot of people right now who are feeling like they are not part of the team because they're frightened and they're worried and they're scared about what a Trump administration means to them personally in their lives. I'm thinking about people of color, the LGBT community, immigrants. What would you say to them?
Well, the thing is, for some reason, it seemed like polls weren't feeling the pulse of what was really happening with people who supported Trump. And I think it came as a shock to people who were reading. If you just read one part of media and you're listening to leaders, even Obama said Trump won't be president. This one said Trump won't be president. So, of course, it comes as a shock to people, right?
Well, I think people are feeling a sense of shock and concern because of what
he
the president-elect even
what they
himself,
think
what he said during the election. But then there's also this. Just recently, the president-elect named Steve Bannon,
yes,
of Breitbart News, as his role is going to be as chief strategist for the White House. Now, Breitbart has been, you know, a major megaphone for white nationalists. That is one of the reasons that people point to, like, that's why they're concerned.
So what I would encourage people to do is to read about Mr. Bannon. I always take exception to whether somebody says, like, white nationalists. Like, what does that mean exactly? I don't know what that means, white nationalists. What is that? I don't understand what that means.
Well, I think it means there's a group of people out there who believe that America should be a white nation. They want the white race to be, you know, the privileged race in this country. They also call them European ethno-nationalists. I mean, it is about race.
Is that what Steve believes?
Well, he's done nothing to disavow the people who do say it explicitly.
I don't want the country to be all white. And I know many of the Trump supporters who aren't white don't want the country to be all white. Like Chinese Americans for Trump, huge group, an enormous group. Why did they come? You have to ask yourself, why did the Chinese Americans for Trump, a million strong or more across the United States, why did they come out for Trump?
Yeah.
The Haitian community.
So, Diana, those are all good questions, but let me just phrase it this way. And I also then want to get
but
to
But I do want to answer your question.
Yeah, well, so go
okay,
ahead.
So Trump supporters are not a group of white nationalists. We're a very varied group of people.
Yeah.
We're not monsters. We believe in America, and we believe in America first. What is so wrong with that?
You know, I think this is why this is such a complicated moment
it's
for us
as an
American, because coalitions are always that. They're coalitions of different groups of people who come together to support one candidate. And the reasons why they might support that candidate are different. I take your point. You and many people we've spoken to and many millions of supporters of Donald Trump are not racist. But I think the thing that people struggle with is there was a writer who put it this way. One particular supporter of Mr. Trump may not be a white nationalist. But by saying that the things that Donald Trump said as a candidate and the choices he might make as president, which do hew closer to white nationalist thinking, by saying that stuff doesn't bother them, that it makes it hard to say that they're not
supporting
inadvertently supporting.
Right, but how can you, how do you know who's going to follow you? You just can't, because what's the difference? Hillary Clinton had supported Black Lives Matter, and a lot of them have done not so, such good things.
While what you're saying, I think some people listening probably would object to it, I want to ask you about how President-elect Trump can lead. You know, because, for example, the Southern Poverty Law Center has already documented 200...
I don't believe them. You,
well, I do.
I don't believe them.
You don't believe that there have been, there's been a, FBI has even said there's been a spike in hate crimes against Muslim
Americans. The Southern Poverty Law Center has a reputation of preying on people who are very poor.
Diana, I love you and respect you, but I've got to disagree with you on that point. Do you disagree with the FBI saying that there's been a spike in hate crimes against Muslim Americans?
I'd have to look at the statistics. I haven't seen them. I mean, they might be new statistics for the last week. I don't buy it.
Well, I think the FBI has been saying that there's been a spike in hate crimes against Muslim Americans. But what I want to ask you, to come back to your analogy of America as a team, if we take, you know, President-elect Trump is now, like, he's like the coach of the team.
He's leading the team now.
If the team feels so divided, what should the coach be saying? What should the leader of the team be saying to bring that team together?
He has come out and said that he wants people to stop that, and he was interviewed on 60 Minutes. Well, he's not the president yet. I feel like Obama has to be the leader. He's the leader right now. He is the leader. People look up to him. He's still the president. Obama needs to get out there, and he has to quell this stuff. Because who are they going to listen to? They're going to listen to Trump right now? Uh-uh.
But the folks who voted for him would listen to the president-elect.
Yes, but I would argue with you, but not in an argumentative way.
You can. This is an open table.
Right, but that's not the problem. Honestly, I would put it right back on you and say Obama needs to be the person to get out there as the president and reassure people.
So he did say something to that effect in this press conference that he gave earlier this week. And I think he was out there in the days after the election, too. He gave a Rose Garden press conference when he said, hey, look, everybody, just want to remind you, the sun still rises.
Yes,
no matter
every
what.
Night, though, I think he needs to come out.
Every night. Okay.
I think believe me, I am not trying to minimize people. I'm not. But you have to take a step back. It is going to be okay. Yeah. It really is going to be okay. It is.
So one more question about Washington. So you mentioned about draining the swamp, as Donald Trump said he'd like to do when he was a candidate for the White House. There seems to be some debate as to whether or not that's actually happening, right? Because just today in the Boston Globe, there was a big article about how lobbyists, in fact, may be more excited than ever about their opportunities in Washington now, because there will be a Republican in the White House and in the Senate and the House of Representatives. This could be the gravy train for lobbyists. Does that concern you?
It doesn't. You know what concerns me more is that people write stories like that.
The Globe was quoting actual lobbyists who were saying this.
Right. But what I'm saying is, just because that's what they're saying and that's what they're hoping doesn't make it a fact. There are so many intertwinings, connections of people. That's the swamp. There's so many people tied into one another. And okay, well, if I do this, it benefits this one. If I do that, right? And that's what he's talking about. Those lobbyists, I think they're in for a rude awakening.
Diana, do you ever worry that you might end up feeling disappointed in Donald Trump because the problems run so deep that even he can't change them?
I've been disappointed in my parents. I think it's the same thing, right? I mean, nobody's perfect. Like I said, my opinion, Diana's opinion, is that we were on a cliff and we were hanging over. I feel like we've been pulled back. That's the biggest thing that Mr. Trump brought, and that I hope that people will pay attention to. Even if they hate him, he said things that people didn't want to hear, right? They didn't want to hear it. And you know what? Some of those things turned out, well, yeah, he was right. Like,
I mean, I don't think...
I mean, I'm just asking. Yeah. Like, what is so wrong with America First? And I know you have your list of questions, but I remember the last time when I left you, I said something about my health insurance, and I'll take 30 seconds. I mean, I almost want to cry.
Of the cost of your insurance?
You know how much my insurance is this year? I've already paid? $18,000. I canceled my insurance. I had to, because I can't afford it. I'm also supporting my father. Why? Because he only gets $1,800 a month for Social Security. His rent alone is $900, and his health care expenses are about $600. His co-pays went up. So one prescription a month that he gets went from $8 a month to $44, right? 2 years ago, my father took an overdose because he couldn't pay to live. He doesn't have enough money to live.
Your father had tried to take his own life.
Yeah. So 2 years ago, he's not a big drinker anymore. He used, you know, he doesn't drink, bought like a bottle of scotch, was on Dilaudid for a pain thing, which he shouldn't have been on, but that's a different story. Took 24 Dilaudid, washed it down with like 5 drinks of scotch, and went to bed. And luckily, because my father's so good with his routine, he put his oxygen on because he has COPD and he sleeps with it. And he wasn't thinking, you know, he's drunk, he's high, whatever. And then he woke up in the morning. And fortunately, I had called him and I was, you know, I'm a nurse and I'm listening to him. And
did he tell you why he did it?
He did tell me because he couldn't afford to live. And so that was one of my decisions to sell my house because I knew financially I couldn't work, support him, do the house, do my business. And so when I see people, even on Facebook, saying, well, what about this person? What about that person? I'm thinking, well, what about me? It's a lot of money that I give my father every month from the sale of my house, which I'm almost out of. So this is personal, right? I mean, it is personal to have to do something like that. And I'm not looking for like a pat on the back. I'm not looking for martyrdom. I'll figure it out. But I want people to know that when do we start taking care of the people that are here? Like, I need to take care of my father. And so I'm trying to figure it out, right? So now I'm canceling my health insurance and that money's going to go to help me take care of my father. What else can I do? So I have to ask people who are listening, what about Diana's father who has a name? His name is Richard. Doesn't his life matter? That's why I'm supporting Trump, because I really feel like why doesn't Diana's life matter anymore? Why does somebody else's life matter more than mine or my father's? That was supposed to be my 30-second, but it was more like 2-minute little spiel, because I'm honestly trying hard not to cry because it's crippling me. I'm crippled. I really am. So there you go.
So I want you to know right now, Diana, that to me and to everyone who works on this show, I believe that everybody does matter. Absolutely.
And I appreciate that. I do. I appreciate that.
And I will stand by that to my dying breath. So that's why I want to say thank you again for coming back and talking with us, because I want to hear. Everyone wants to hear. We want to share everybody's stories. Because I feel like, you know, when you talk about the team, if the members of the team don't understand each other, it's not much
right,
of a team,
exactly,
right?
Exactly.
But I got to wrap up. Is that all right?
Okay. No, it's not okay. it was wonderful chatting with you.
It's always
great. I always listened to you on the radio for years and years and years. Oh. Isn't that funny?
Now you're making me seem like I'm old lady.
I know, it's so funny to put a face to the name. And well, I always pictured you, I don't know, like top floor penthouse.
No way. No, I'm here in my jeans and my polar fleece.
Top floor penthouse. That's no. How I pick.
Hey, I mean, it's public radio. We're down here with everyone else.
And
okay?
It's beautiful though. This is a beautiful studio. Yeah. It's beautiful here.
Well, let me just say, Diana Ploss, it is always great to talk with you. I thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming in, talking with us, and sharing your story. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thanks to Cassandra too.
Diana Ploss lives in Gloucester, and for much of the past year, she volunteered full-time for the Trump campaign. You heard Diana mention the name Cassandra at the end there. She was talking about Cassandra Sunt, one of our fantastic Radio Boston producers. Our team happens to also include Kathleen McNerney, Jamie Bologna, Allison Bruzek, and Virginia Marshall. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. And today, we say a very fond farewell to one of the most delightful members of the Radio Boston family, producer Emmajean Weinstein. For several years, Emmajean managed our arts coverage, she created our digital content, and she was the invisible hand behind our website. She also kept us on time and very organized with her love of a precise show clock, checklists made of hand-drawn boxes, and an insatiable hunger to get every fact right, every guest fully researched, every story angle thoroughly explored. Imogene, we will miss you so very, very dearly, but we know that you'll help take your new team to great successes, just as you did with us. Thank you again, Imogene. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.